David Lee Roth
on 92.3
Free FM.
This is Cowboy Troy. Check this out. This is majorly good.
Like train coming round the bend. Go on, kid, folks, tell your mom and them. Chugga-lugga. Ooh, the big black neck coming through to you. Boy, you done fell and bumped your head. Uh-huh, that's what they said. People say it's impossible, not probable, too radical. But I already been on the CMAs. Held Tim McGraw, said he liked the change. Said he likes the way my
That is amazing. That's heavy lifting. That's great strong medicine. And that's Cowboy Troy right here on Roth Radio. Cowboy Troy, are you on the phone?
I'm here. What's going on, David?
It's all going on according to you. That's an amazing sound, Troy.
Thank you.
Wow. How long does it take you to come up with something original like that? That's utterly unique.
Well, I appreciate that. It depends on how inspired I am at the time. Sometimes I can come up with lyrics for a song maybe within a couple of hours. Sometimes it takes a couple of weeks. It just really depends on the energy level in the room when we start writing.
And how long ago did this come out? Is this brand new?
That particular song was released when my album came out May 17 of 2005.
Okay, so this is news to a whole lot of people, though. You know, I was the one who said, we need to get this fella onto the air here. And we're broadcasting to all kinds of inner city, you know, New York and Pittsburgh and so forth, where this kind of a sound is just really starting to lock in here. What do you call this kind of music, Troy?
I call it hick-hop music instead of hip-hop. Hip-hop. See, coming from Texas and being, a big fan of country music ever since I was a little kid, me and my buddies used to get called hicks because we were just, country boys. And, but I also like rap and all my friends like rap, so I figured why not make hick-hop music.
And where'd you grow up, Troy?
Dallas, Texas.
Okay. How old are you?
35.
All right, so you're the target demo here, and there's very few African-American country music stars. What's been the traditional audience's reaction to what you're doing here?
Well, at first, there were a lot of question marks above people's heads, but after a while, people kind of chilled out a little bit and realized that it was actually pretty decent deal, and they're having fun with it.
Well, if there's not shock, horror, and immediate, oh my God, then it's not really great work, I don't think. It's like Tony Soprano says, some people, you got to wake them up before they pay attention, huh?
Yeah, that's the truth.
Okay, what's it like being a, now you are, in fact, a judge on Nashville Star, right?
Well, actually, I'm fortunate enough not to have to be a judge. I'm a co-host of the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's a lot easier to host the show, I think, than judging. Because people are like, well, why did you not vote this person to advance to the next round or whatever? So I'm glad I don't have to make that rough decision.
Okay. And are you planning to take this on tour anytime soon? Do you have a band that you've got going, or is that all still in development?
Well, I've got a band that I tour with from time to time, but for the last year and some change, I've been on tour with Big and Rich. Did the song Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy, and stuff like that, and come into your city.
Okay, and you perform with people like Big Rich and Tim McGraw, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so there you have a pretty big cross section there. What does your audience look like now?
Well, I've heard that there's been sort of a browning of the country music audience more I come out and perform. So it varies, though. Most of the time, I've had people tell me that, hey, I'm a school teacher, and I love your music, and as a treat, I let my kindergartners listen to your song if they're good and quiet and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of really interesting how it works.
I saw something on Country Music Channel about Jimmy Buffett, and evidently his biggest market is here in New York City, of all places, right here in Manhattan. Where do you think is the biggest place that's enjoying your music right now? I'm talking to Cowboy Troy.
Well, I'm understanding that people in my hometown of Dallas and also in Fort Worth really like what I do. There's a lot of folks in the Tampa area, down in Florida, and some parts of California, but from what I understand, it just varies from place to place. Some places like certain songs off the record, and some places like other songs.
It sounds like you're describing warm weather music. Seriously, where you just described is all the great outdoors, right?
Well, yeah, it is pretty cool, but folks in Detroit are starting to come around too, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah, well, you have a really super modern kind of sound working in your rhythm section there. At first, it's very difficult to define what it is you're doing. That's beautiful work, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. What were your main influences in music when you were growing up in Dallas, Texas?
Well, as a kid, you know, I started listening to Charlie Daniels and Jerry Reed. And also, over the years, I listened to a lot of ZZ Top, and I listened to a lot of Van Halen from time to time, by the way.
And do you play an instrument yourself, Troy?
No, not that great at instrumentation. I started out with trumpet, but I left it alone after I got in sixth grade.
Yeah, but you're still playing a wind instrument. Yeah. What kind of music do you like to sing in your private time? When you're singing in the shower, what are you singing along with on the radio?
Good gosh. Actually, when I'm in the shower, if I have to do anything, I'm listening to maybe talk radio.
Really? Because most people start singing in the shower, and that's where you continue to do all of your best practice. That's where the sound is the best. Agreed? Disagree?
Oh, that's true, but I spend so much time around loud music that it's a lot easier to just kind of let my head decompress.
Ah. What kind of car are you driving now, Cowboy Troy?
Driving a Chevrolet Trailblazer 2006 model.
Gotcha. And where are you living currently? You still in the Dallas area?
No, actually, about a year and a half ago, my wife and I moved to Nashville.
And what does your wife do? She in the music business?
No, she helps take care of the house, and she's excited now that she doesn't have to do a whole lot other than take care of the residents.
I got you. And as opposed to just, as with working on the Nashville Star, why'd you pick Nashville? I think I know, but why would you pick Nashville to work to move to?
Well, I mean, I've been friends with Big and Rich for years. I mean, long before either of us got into the music business. And, and when they got in and made such an impact, they invited me to come along. So I decided to go and move to Nashville when they invited me out there.
You getting any kind of play from the rock and roll community? Because I'm seeing, you know, fellas like Kid Rock and the Bon Jovis swinging over to country music television and so forth. And there's always, something like a Woodstock or the Burning Man, or there's always these confabs where you have a multiple of bands, different kinds of acts together. Has anybody reached out for you yet to pull you into the rock and roll community? You doing anything with MTV or MTV2 yet?
Not that I'm aware of. So, hopefully it'll come around. You never know. I mean, I'm one of those types that likes to listen to all different types of music, if they'd like to have me a part of that festival scene or anything like that, it'd be great.
Yeah, well, it's only a matter of time. Like I said, between Little Kim and going to prison, it's just a matter of time.
Wow.
You experience any kind of racist issues? Anything overt that sticks out to you?
You know, not so much. I mean, every once in a while you might see or hear something on a message board or on a website, but for the most part, everything is pretty much in between the lines, and folks are pretty cool about stuff.
Congratulations. What you got planned coming up in the immediate future for your next album? Are you writing material now?
Yeah, I'm working on new material, and every now and again when I get maybe a few hours, I'll go in the studio and maybe throw down some rough song ideas and kind of mess with those a little bit and experiment with different sounds and things of that nature. And hopefully between now and tail end of this year, maybe first part of next, we'll probably have a new record ready to go.
Outstanding. Have you traveled pretty extensively touring yet, or is that something that's still in front of you?
Yeah, I've been running for the last year and a half, almost 2 years, just constantly, playing. Big and Rich were co-producers on the record, and they made sure that I have had an opportunity to go out and tour with them, so it makes it a lot easier and getting that exposure with all these different audiences around the country.
You gone outside the United States yet?
Yeah, we played London, and we played Hamburg, Germany.
Stop right there. What is the UK's take on you? What was your take on the United Kingdom?
I thought it was really cool. London reminds me a lot of New York, from what I could gather, and they seemed to be pretty open to what we were doing, and got a nice round of applause, and that was cool.
England, 22 religions, one sauce. What about Germany? What about the language barrier? Did it mean anything? Because sometimes language barriers makes the music even more better.
Yeah, well, many of the people that we bumped into in Hamburg and in Cologne spoke English fairly well, but they really enjoyed what we did. So I had fun. I thought it was a really neat experience.
Have you been to Japan yet?
Not yet. I wouldn't mind going there. I really would love to go to Japan and maybe somewhere in China, maybe Hong Kong or something like that.
Well, in those kinds of countries, they don't have the cultural attentions that we have here. Here we grew up around cowboys, we grow up around hip-hop, etc. Japan is Japan, and they don't place it, they don't have the communities of people. A music listener is just as likely to listen to you as they are to the Sex Pistols, as they are to Beyonce, as they are to, they'll all have that whole thing in their collection. I'd be very curious as to what their take on you is, because they probably give you the fairest run of the goal. They don't have any preconceptions at all. If you're good, you're good. How much you weigh now, Troy?
Sitting in around 255.
Okay, and is this does this bring extra sound to the stage?
Yeah, I guess when I come stomping out on it, probably.
How long does it take you to prepare for a show? How long do you guys rehearse?
Well, it varies. If we're going to do a full show of just my songs, you know, I'll probably take an afternoon or two to just run through the set with the band and things of that nature. If we're doing a few songs, you know, maybe one or two, three, you know, within the parameters of a big and rich show, it doesn't take much time at all. We've been doing the show so long that everything's pretty squared away.
Talking to Cowboy Troy, any reflections for up-and-coming new hip-hop musicians, Troy?
Yeah, persistence is the key. I remember when I was in high school, there was a guy came and gave a speech, and he talked about, you know, if you just show up, you eliminate 50% of your competition. If you show up on time, 75% of your competition's out the way. And if you show up on time with a plan of action, you don't have to worry about 95% of your competition. You only have to worry about that upper 5%.
Cowboy Troy, you sound like a stalker.
Hey, well, not me.
try again. Perseverance. It's like location. Perseverance.
Yes, indeed.
Talking to one of my new favorites, Cowboy Troy. Thanks so much for calling in, Troy.
Hey, thank you, David. I appreciate it.
Good luck to you. Interesting call, huh? That's an interesting sound. Play that sound one more time there, Hutch, if you can. Bang on that.
Like train coming round the bend. Go on, kinfo, tell your mom and them. Chugga-lugga. Ooh, the big black neck coming through to you. Boy, you done fell and bumped your head. Uh-huh, that's what they said. People say it's impossible, not probable, too radical. But I already been on my CMAs. Hell, Tim McGraw said he liked the change. Said he likes the way my hiccup sounds and the way the crowd screams when I stomp the ground. I'm thinking black, clickety-clack, and I make the train jump the track like that.
I play chicken with the train. Play chicken with the
Roth, 92.3 Free FM.
Rough Radio, first thing in the morning. Dave TV, nothing but yeah.
Rough Radio, 866-313-3733. Coming from New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach, and especially Dallas, Texas. That's Cowboy Troy's stomping grounds, right? That was a great interview. Amazing music that he's doing there. Animal, are you going to go buy that record?
I sure am, man. I like it, man. It's kind of like, you know, a little hip-hop country mixed together. You know, I like what he called it, too, man. You know, it's cool.
It's hip-hop.
Yeah, hip-hop, you know. And I know some boys used to play, you know, like getting in front of the train and stuff, jumping off the trestle. But I couldn't swim, so I never tried it, you know. But, you know, they get it right to the train, get so close. And then they would, like, just jump off just before the train get to him, man, you know. So.
Does this fella dress like a hick when he goes up there? Does he wear bib overalls? Is that what qualifies as a hick? Seriously.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
What would down in Covington County, where, what would you wear?
Well, you wouldn't wear no shoes. That was one of the things. And you would have, like, your pants would be, like, maybe 4 inches too short, you know?
Okay.
And you would have a white T-shirt with tobacco stains on it.
That sounds... Okay, we've got a phone call here in reference to one of our earlier very important priority news items here, Germany's sex industry gearing up for the World Cup. And we have a phone call from Germany, actually. Dirk, are you on the air?
I am. Hi,
hey,
Dave.
Where are you calling from, Dirk?
I'm calling from Berlin, Germany.
Okay, and what is your reflection on an army of prostitutes who are preparing to fill my needs?
You know, this is very funny, because all the houses in the red light districts, they got tents in front of the houses for the people who come there, for the men who come there, to wait in front of houses to get, you know, it's like a waiting line.
Oh, you mean it's like a catering tent at the Oscars?
Yeah, that's it.
And do they serve drinks and stuff for the waiting? Do they take a number? Explain this.
I don't know exactly how it will work, but it's supposed to be like that, yeah.
Well, I think things have since developed, because the first time I went to one of these girls was in 1978 at the Rue Saint-Denis in Paris, and I had to sit with her on the stairs behind three other guys and their girls. And now you're saying they're providing shelter and warmth and the whole thing. How many people do you expect to descend upon the country as fans, actually, supporters?
I don't know, but it will be millions.
It's huge.
And the funny thing is, everything in Berlin is under construction. You know what I mean?
What do you mean it's under construction?
You know, we got all the streets they rebuilt them. They make them new.
Let me ask this, Dirk. Yeah. Is prostitution legal in all of the cities in Germany?
Yeah.
Okay. And does each city have its own red light district?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, it's legal everywhere. You can do it everywhere.
Okay. And this is familiar to me from reading about people like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, who only really existed because of places like the Star Club in the Red Light District in Hamburg. Correct?
That's it.
Okay.
That's where I work sometimes. In Hamburg. Yeah.
Well, where?
St. Pauli.
Well, what is the connection? Why do they call it St. Pauli? Because that's a familiar beer here in town. Why?
No, I guess the beer, it's called after St. Pauli. It's that very famous district in Hamburg.
And how many millions of dollars do you think are going to pour into the prostitution industry?
It's not millions, it's billions.
Billions of dollars?
It's billions of dollars in Germany.
Being poured into the community, no pun intended, huh?
No. You know, all the prostitutes, they have to pay taxes.
How do you tax a prostitute? This is interesting.
How do you say? Oh my God! My God! My English is not that good in the morning. You know what the best thing about your show is?
Tell.
In Germany, it's from 12 to 4.
So it's the happy hour show.
They just guess how much they make. And they take the taxes from them.
Because the only versification in something like this that I've had was the first time that I went to Japan. And I don't really speak Japanese. Perhaps you can explain, because I think she was trying to write how much to tax. It went like this. No, you pay 2 times. Same girl, but you go 2 times. She same me. So, would that qualify as once or twice?
I don't know. But the good thing is that she didn't say to beaucoup.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What has been the impact of legalizing prostitution? This is a serious question, or as serious as we're going to get here. What has been the impact of legalizing prostitution on the general community of Germany? Because this is an issue in the United States that would cause an uproar. Has it caused a disintegration of moral values, or has it just made guys quieter?
Not at all. It makes guys quieter. And I think it's a good thing. You know, I'm a traveling man, just like you. I work as a comedian, and I travel all over the country. Yeah?
You travel all over Germany?
Oh, yeah, and more. We do for the boys, you know, like Afghanistan and Sarajevo and all this thing.
Oh, so you really are a man of the world.
Yes.
Okay, I understand. Go ahead.
And if you go with a car, you know, you travel around the country, you got this how do you say, trailers. Yeah.
Yeah, I know them very well.
You can just park on the street, and there's a trailer with a prostitute in there.
See, the only thing we have downtown are Hasidic Jews who are trying to proselytize. This is a very different take on roadside flavor. But it sounds to me like this is easily accepted and that this is as common as going to the dentist. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. And the good thing is, you mentioned Hamburg. You got all the cultural center there. You got the theaters, you got the musicals, just like the Broadway. Yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
In between, there are the prostitutes, and it's a mixture, and it's fine.
I've been in that part of Hamburg, actually. I've played at the Star Club, where the Beatles performed way back in the early 60s there. And you're absolutely correct. You're defining a cultural center. The prostitution is but part of it, correct?
Yes. This is cool.
Yeah, this is where all the clubs and the restaurants, this is where all the movie shows are. This is all kinds of shopping and a lot of people on the street. And for some reason, Germany has decided that this is just a regular part of life. America is still struggling with this. How many years has prostitution been legal in Germany, Dirk?
I guess since the end of the World War.
Okay, since the World War. Which
I
one?
I don't know exactly, but I guess it's like this.
This was common for many, as long as you can possibly remember, correct?
I'm 68 born.
You're 68 years old?
No, I'm born in 68.
Oh, I was going to say, because if you're 68, you are a walking advertisement for legalized prostitution.
Yeah.
I can't see your skin tone, but your energy is amazing, sir.
my dad was.
What about with the military? You say that you're traveling and you're working the German military in and around the Mideast, correct?
In the Mideast?
Yes.
No. It's Far East. Afghanistan, it's not Mideast.
Okay. But you have been visiting these troops like we do with the USO, the Servicemen's Organization, and entertaining the German troops. Is that correct?
Yeah, we were the first. You know, we don't have that tradition because we have some, depending on World War, we have some problems with our military, you know?
What kind of problems are you having with the military that prohibits that?
Well, you know, we are not proud of our soldiers. Because of the history.
I understand. And, well, my question then is, what about the prostitution that's involved with in and around the military? Are there places in and around where the military bases itself? Is that part of it, just like going to the PX and buying, you know, cigarettes and toilet paper? Is that considered?
In Germany it is. Try that in Kabul.
Well, no, not in Kabul. Everybody gets an erection when they see an ankle down there.
You don't see any ankles. You see blue moving objects. That's what they call the women there.
Precisely.
Of the shadow.
Precisely. But you're saying that in Germany, surrounding the bases and so forth, it's every bit as much a part of the daily life, etc.
Sure it is.
How do women respond to legalized prostitution in Germany? Is it an acceptance, or are they just quietly tolerating, or what's going on?
It's absolutely tolerated.
This is a fascinating phone call. Dirk, thank you for giving us a little heads up here. This is an interesting phone call. God bless.
Thank you for a lot of good summers.
Give us a call again sometime. Dirk calling from Germany. Outstanding. Anyways, did you guys get that call collect? Was that a call collect? You know what? Let's open up the phones to anybody outside the United States. We'll take it collect, okay? We're technically ready for that there, Dukes. That's okay? Anywhere from outside the United States, because a lot of the news that we're actually talking about, people call in. You know, we got a call from Caracas, Venezuela the other day. We got a call from Paris, France. I'd rather sleep with Paris Hilton, but when I'm done, I want to talk to Paris, France, right? That's interesting. We start talking about Germany's sex industry. And again, this was about an Armini. I started to sample myself there. An Armini of prostitutes to satisfy the needs of all the fans during the month-long 2006 World Cup. And from what Dirk says, he was calling in from Berlin, is that that's a billion-dollar industry and that so many people line up, they put tents out in front of the cat houses there. It sounds like the warm-up tent at the Grammys or something, you know. Probably the company is a little better. You look expectant. What do you want to say?
I was thinking, sloppy 347ths.
Is it possible to stalk a prostitute? You're supposed to stalk a prostitute, right? I'm afraid to open the phones up on that
one.
Those
are called regulars.
No, at McDonald's, those are called heavy users. Roth Radio, New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach, and now Berlin. Yes. He says that the women in Germany are very accepting of this. What would your wife say if prostitution was legal here in the United States, Animal? What would your wife say if you said, and I'm going to go pick up some dog food and a rake and then get laid, and I'll be back at 4 o'clock? What do you think?
Well, my clothes are probably waiting outside for me, and if it was legal, she'd probably have a tracking device on me, knowing every move that I made or something of that nature.
Okay, but what if prostitution's legal, then it probably banks both ways, okay? So what would you be accepting if she's said, yeah, I'm coming home from work, I'm going to stop at a prostitute, pick up some dog food, and I'll see you at 6. Would you be accepting of that?
I don't think she would be, man, because I think she would probably follow me everywhere I go, man. I probably have a third shadow or something walking around.
Yeah, but what if there were prostitutes for your wife to go to? Would you be accepting of that?
Well, I don't think so, man. If she would go get a girl, I wouldn't really care. But a guy, no, I wouldn't be too happy with that.
Yeah, but that's like when you give your old lady underwear and she goes, isn't this more a present for you? What about you, Hutch? Would your wife be accepting if you, on the way out for a pack of cigarettes and a copy of the newspaper, you stopped at a prostitute? Because from what Dirk in Germany was just describing is that that's so commonly easy that it's like picking up a gallon of milk. Is that, would that, what would you experience at home?
Donna, I love you. He's forcing me to do this, okay? He's forcing me to do this. My arm is behind my back. Now, I've known many prostitutes. I've never been to one. This is the honest, God's honest truth. What my wife would say would be ditto to animals. My clothes would be on the lawn. I'd be a dead man.
I wonder if this is an issue where if you grow up with it, as a little kid, and it's as common as anything else. There's the police officer, there's the fire person, there's the prostitute, there's my third grade teacher. What if you grow up as a little kid accepting it? Is that, does everybody then accept it? Or is there some kind of a genetic thing
that
kicks in?
Well, I think it would be a little different if we growed up with it, because, you know, we was, you know, exposed to it. It's like a part of life. So she shouldn't have a problem with it because it's a normal, common thing, you know?
Well,
if we just grow it up with it.
It's like any kind of food, too. You know, there are certain kind of foods that if you didn't grow up eating it, you know, there's certain kinds of soul food, there's certain kind of ethnic foods or whatever, then, you know, if you didn't grow up with it, you'll never get used to it. But I've seen people eat stuff amazing, and I go, how can you eat that? They go, I've been eating it since I was a tiny little kid.
Yeah, like Brian, he eat fish guts. I eat hog guts, and I think his fish guts is nasty, and he think my hog guts is nasty.
But he's a surfer, and I've never seen you anywhere near the ocean, man. All right, we got another call here from he's from New York, and he wants to talk about what's going on in Greece. Swing, hit the button there, right? Roth Radio, who am I talking to?
Manolis.
Manolis, how are you?
How are you? I just wanted to put some input on that. I mean, in Greece, I went, my first time was with a prostitute, and my dad actually sent me. It wasn't it's not a big deal in Greece either. It's legal there also.
How old were you?
I was about 17.
I was never so lucky. And is this something that is a pattern of your social life up to this point in time, or did you ever do it again?
No, yeah, of course I've done it again, but it was just basically, you know, just out of experience, you know, just to send me there, see how it is before, you know. You know, I get more, you know, just for experience, basically it was.
I'm all for your first three lessons. Always try and get the best professional in any artistic pursuit. If you want to learn to draw, find the best teacher who teaches you to draw. You want to learn to fly an airplane? Pay the money. Get a professional instructor, the best you can afford, because then you're going to love the sport from then on. And you're saying the same thing about prostitution?
Yes, I agree, yeah.
I can't top that. God bless you and Greece, man.
somebody know. It's talking about enough. It's talking about enough. It's talking about enough.
Mornings, David Lee Roth on 92.3 Free FM.
Пожаловать в клуб, Дэйв. Мы здесь вам позволяем говорить только «Добро пожаловать!» Rough Radio.
Talking prostitutes. One for me and one for you. We just got a call all the way from Berlin, Germany. I told you we're worldwide. We're on the web here, davidleeroth.com. Everywhere that you can possibly imagine and some that you're still working on spelling here. And I was going to change the subject, but the phones are lit up. I'm not sure if these are prostitutes calling me. I'm kind of a prostitute. Hey, don't jump on the edge of the bed while I'm trying to make a living. Come on, man. It's Roth Radio. Don't jump on the end of the console. Let's put the first call on here, Roth Radio. She looks like she's from Lisa from Queens. Go ahead, Lisa, you're on the phone.
Hi, I'm not a prostitute.
Okay, what's your reflection on this subject anyways?
My reflection is Stacey's meant to tell you you suck!
What's that? Do try it one more time here. Did she blow out the phone?
Yeah, that was a whole bunch of fun, wasn't it?
Oh, what, no, wait. Was that the was that a secret message, the usual secret message that our hecklers give us? Okay, friends, I encourage you to call up and heckle us, but you're going to have to be inventive. You're going to have to be unique. I suggest a little sense of humor or something particularly vicious, okay? I'm not afraid of racial humor or religious bias here. I have a small but manageable drinking problem or a checkered past here. But you suck does not qualify as either an insult, a heckler, or even a decent phone call. In fact, darling, turn off the music here. You suck yourself. Yeah. Okay. I gotta admit that the prostitution issue becomes something of it's on a lot of people's minds, okay? And I had described the first time I went to one was when the Van Halens went on tour in 1978. And we went to a very famous place in outside of Paris, France, called Rue Saint-Denis. It's the street called Saint-Denis. And it's spelled D-E-N-I-S, the French. They speak so well, but they can't spell for stuff, right? Rue Saint-Denis. And we all went. Most of the guys in the road crew, I don't remember the Van Halens went. They always stayed home. But there were probably 14 of us. And we went down the street. It was right around midnight. And this is old, old city. Classic. This is like out of Napoleon's era. And you just cruise up and down the street and all the girls are standing out there. You know, it's the police just make sure that nobody's bothering the girls. And I picked this amazing blonde. She had like that a Dutch girl thing, you know, with the bangs that go straight across, with the little thing that goes right down to the bottom of her cheekbone like this. And she had on these boots, these great boots that went up about 4 inches above her knee. Okay, in 1978, this was amazing, mind-roasting stuff. Today, after Madonna, today after Britney, it's kind of par for the course, right? But back then, this stopped you cold. This made your knuckles drag. My IQ went down 14 points. I don't have that much to spare to begin with, all right? So I had the limousine drop me off, and, you know, and they just started prowling around. I told them when I'm done, I'll come back down on the street. You guys can pick me up. And, I spoke a little bit of French. I can still, you know, get us completely in trouble and not all the way out in French. And, you know, we brokered a deal, you know. We decided we were going to create a merger. This is a commercial pursuit, okay? It's just business. Like they say in every movie, it's just business. This is going to feel personal, but it's not, all right? And we walked into this building, like an apartment building, that must have been, no lie, coming from the late 1600s, early 1700s. I fully expected somebody dressed like Napoleon to come out the door. The stairway was out of a Charles Dickens novel, something like the Pickwick Papers, or think The Christmas Story, you know, that time time frame, and there had been so many feet on the stairs that they were all punched in. It was crooked, like Wicked Witch of the West kind of stuff. And the stairway was so vertical that you really had to hang on. It was more like a ladder. And there were three other business guys sitting on the top stair, then the guy on the second stair, then the guy on the third stair, and they each had their girl with them. There was no waiting area, okay? Much like the studio here. Except the prostitutes then were much better looking. And we sat down on the stairway and we waited, you know, and there were little rooms that were subdivided or whatever. And I walked into her little room. Okay. And, you know, a little cubicle or whatever. And she says, okay, let's take off our clothes and everything. And she takes off everything except for one boot. And my filthy little imagination kicks in and I go, oh, this is going to be amazing. I've never been with a prostitute before, much less one who doesn't speak English. In a place like this, it's a page torn out of history. And I don't know, but not the reason I'm here is for I'm uninitiated. I'm ready to be illuminated. Educate me, baby. Yeah. And I think, okay, I've seen a few videos. I've read a few magazines. I got a vague idea of what's about to transpire. All right. And I figured my mind's going on. I'm going, I don't know what she's going to do with that boot, but there's a reason that she left that one boot on. I don't know what. Maybe she's going to pull something out of the boot, like I don't know what's in there or something, and hit me with it. I don't know. A fella could get lucky. I'm an optimist. When I go fishing, I take a Nikon camera and a frying pan. I think large. I paint with big easels. I am ready. I am your target. Get ready to hit me, baby, right? And she starts to get busy. And we're doing all the normal routines. Here's first base. She's still got the boot on. I'm going, oh, she's waiting until second base. As I come around second base, she's going to, I don't know what, maybe she'll lift her leg and kind of get me like in one of those figure four neck locks, you know, like in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but like, you know, facing me or something like this. And then, okay, I wait. We get to second base. Still just a standard operating routine, standard menu. Okay, go from this position to that position. I'm going, oh, she's waiting for the big finish. Okay, I get it. And when the big finish happens, maybe she'll take her foot and slide it up under somewhere I didn't expect, and that'll cause, you know, a refraction of the dilation, and it'll rock my nation. We get to third base, and I'm just about to finish, and I'm paying more attention to that boot, because I don't know, man, maybe this is like, maybe she's going to punish me for not being, for being American or something like this, and my mind is racing, and things are just like slowing down, like when you have an accident like that, and it's like tachycardia, man. Like when you're about to have a crash, and all of a sudden, everything slows down. Just like that. That's right. And I finish, and I go, oh, man, maybe this is for the encore. The encore is always the best part of the show. Maybe there's going to be two encores. I paid extra. You know, like this. And she takes the money off the dresser, because you got to put the money on the dresser first. And she puts it in the boot. Okay. Take another call from the top up there. Go ahead, Roth Radio. You're in. Did you experience the boot as well?
The boot. Oh my God, man! She must have some funky money going on in that boot, man.
She probably.
Oh my God.
She's gonna hop on one foot all the way to the Citicorp Bank, huh?
Oh, check it out. She got all the power, no return in that boot.
So, what do you think about prostitution? Should it be legal in the United States like it is in Germany? What do you think?
Well, dude, check it out. Everybody shows all the Europeans. They know the men know how to make love. The men know how to woo their women. The fucking men. Excuse my language. The men, they've been the prostitutes. They know how to satisfy a woman. The American male, they haven't been to prostitutes. They don't know how to satisfy a woman. If you get more prostitutes in America, you'll have a lot better lovers, men will know how to do it, and then all of a sudden, boom, we'll have a lot more satisfied women out there.
You're going to have a lot more women on the sidewalk smiling, and we're going to go to war as a nation a lot less frequently, do you think?
We'll be
all
less uptight, man.
I got to admit that as funny as the discussion sounds, that there certainly is an element of truth to this. If you look in the Mideast or the Far East, you know, what's happening in Afghanistan, Iraq, et cetera, the guys outnumber the girls by bazillion to one, and any decent girl is wrapped up in a plastic baggie and sent to sit in a corner somewhere far away from the gazing eye of anybody even remotely associated with a spring break mentality when there's no no girls, that's when the riot's going on. Agreed or disagree?
You're exactly right, Dave. From the moment those men are born, they are repressed. They cannot express themselves. They cannot satisfy their emotions. They're torn up between what they need to know and what they're taught. And what they're taught is obsession for their religion rather than expressing themselves. And they get up, bent up and bent out of shape. And what are they going to do? Are they going to strap a bomb on themselves and go blow themselves up? Because that's all they know how to do is blow up.
You know what is going on. Everybody knows what's going on from watching the TV set in federal penitentiaries, right? I wonder what would happen if everybody there was given the opportunity to have a quote-unquote conjugal visit, like Dirk, who called in from Berlin. Did you just pull the trailers up outside, move them into the exercise yard, take down the heavy bags and all the boxing gear, move all the weightlifting pit off to the side, roll in Diamond Dave's 18-wheeler with my 22-girl Kung Fu Army, and do you think we would cut down on the violence on the incarcerated?
Oh, sure. Oh, why not? You got to satisfy that regression, and you'll have less of the, then Dave will get this up kind of thing in the prisons. You know what I'm saying?
I think that if, again, I'm saying it funny, but if you provided that opportunity for people, especially if with good behavior you could lose that option, right? You go stab another inmate, there goes Daphne for 4 months. Oh, I hate these simple solutions when they're so easy and tried and true. Thanks for giving us a call. I want to go to a prostitute, man. Come on, where is it?